Open your Bibles to Mark chapter 8. That's where we're going to be at tonight. And we're going to walk through this text and try and make it come to life and see if we can pull some application out of it. Mark chapter 8, starting in verse 27. The topic of, who do you say I am? And Jesus went on with his disciples to the villages of Caesarea Philippi. So the context of this is Jesus has just done some more miraculous things, and now he's taking his group of followers to Caesarea Philippi. It's sort of a little retreat for them. He takes them on a road trip away from the demands of the crowds and his day-to-day ministry. Jesus is pressed. He's a busy guy. He's popular, and a lot of people need things from him. So he takes his group of guys and his disciples, and they go on a little road trip. And the place where Jesus and his disciples retreat is sort of a peculiar choice, Caesarea Philippi. Now, Caesarea Philippi was originally Panias. It was originally named Panias, named after the Roman god Pan. Pan was the god of the wild, the god of hunting and companion of the nymphs. He was half human and half goat and was also known for his sexual perversion. Pretty guy, isn't he? Here. Half human, half goat. And I got to thinking about this. I wonder who Peter Pan is named after. And you should look into that. It's a little creepy how this ties into Peter Pan. I hate to ruin Peter Pan for any of you Peter Pan fans, but the city, Caesarea Philippi, was in the domain of Herod Philip II. Herod Philip II was one of the sons of Herod the Great. And you'll remember that Herod the Great ruled during the birth of Jesus, and he wanted to kill Jesus. So Herod Philip II, in order to get on the emperor's good side and proclaim his sovereignty, Philip changed the name of the city to Caesarea Philippi. This city was well known for its pagan worship and was dominated by an enormous temple that was dedicated to Caesar, as well as a temple dedicated to Pan, which is in the side of a mountain, as well as several small temples dedicated to other pagan gods. Caesarea Philippi was far away from Jerusalem. In fact, it was as far away from Jerusalem as you could get and still be in Israel. So the question is, why would Jesus want to take his disciples here for a little vacay, right? Why does he want to go here? It's like a group of people who are allergic to cats wanting to go and hang out at Petco. You know, it's just odd. It doesn't make sense. Well, when you think about it, one of the benefits was that Jesus was pretty much assured of not being bothered here. He's pretty much assured of not being recognized in this place. He's far from the center of Jewish activity, so there was little chance of him being stopped on the street corner or followed by a large crowd, which had happened repeatedly in the Gospel of Mark. There was also a deeper reason for Jesus bringing his disciples here. They were surrounded by all sorts of statues and monuments and temples dedicated to pagan gods. And so as they're walking, and if you look in the text, you'll notice it's as they're walking that this conversation takes place. So as they're walking through the midst of these false religions and these idols all around them, Jesus is going to ask his disciples to make a statement of faith in the midst of this place. Jesus is about to show them what following him looks like. Now, all of these false gods, if you follow them, you get the promise of prosperity, of wealth, of agricultural blessings. But Jesus is about to show them that following him actually brings trials and suffering. And it's like, okay, sign me up for that, you know? But before he asks the real question, he wants to test the waters. To whom do the disciples pledge their allegiance? Is sort of the point he wants to get at. But he wants to test the waters before he gets to that question. Look at what he says. And on the way, he asked his disciples, who do people say that I am? You know, so he's taking his own Gallup survey here. You know, you fellows have been out among the people. You've heard the talk on the street corner. My ears are burning. What are you picking up? Who do people say that I am? Listen to their response. And they told him, John the Baptist. Others say Elijah, and others one of the prophets. So the disciples report to Jesus that he has a favorable rating amongst the polls, amongst the people. Now today, we don't necessarily believe that people come back from the dead, except for zombies, Elvis, and Tupac, maybe. But back in that day, it was common that people believed people came back from the dead. So some thought he was the recently beheaded John the Baptist, back from the dead, to prepare the way for the true Messiah. Others thought he was Elijah or Jeremiah or another prophet returned from the dead to pronounce the return of the Messiah. And so all of these speculations, they pay great respect and tribute to Jesus and his character, because it means that they saw him as a great man, a forerunner to the Messiah. So the disciples lay out the facts of what people were saying. But that question was just the precursor for the deeper question that we are all faced with today. And when we read this text, and when we read this question, I hope that you ask yourself this question and think about your answer to this question. Look at verse 29. Jesus prompts them further. What about you? Who do you say I am? Who do you say I am? Now, you got to understand this. They've been with him for over 3 years now. They've been following him around, watching his ministry, watching the way he treats people, experiencing the kingdom of God through his miracles, through his teaching. They've seen Jesus do some pretty incredible stuff. And Jesus is now ready to ask the real question. Do the disciples get it? Has it clicked yet? Do they understand him? Do they know who he really is? So he looks them in the eye, and he brings it from who do they think I am to who do you think I am? What about you? They could no longer report what others were saying. They had to speak for themselves. Have you ever had to say for yourself what you believed about Jesus? It's hard to be put on the spot like that. It's difficult. One Christian author named Fred Craddock says this. He says, you don't know what you believe until you hear yourself say it. You know, I've spent the last 10 to 12 years with my nose buried in books, studying the Bible, studying all about Jesus, the Old Testament, the New Testament, all of this stuff. But one of the hardest questions I've ever faced is when I was studying with someone and they said, well, Boo, who do you believe or what do you believe about Jesus? How do I put this into words? You know, I sort of stammered over my thoughts. How would you answer that? Who do you say he is? And you may think, well, Boo, you should always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you for the hope that is within you. Give me a break. It's a tough question. It's hard to be put on the spot like that. And perhaps while Jesus is asking this question, maybe within the midst of the disciples and the apostles, there's some friendly teasing at this point as they laugh about the silly answers that they've come up with, you know, to the previous question. How about that guy in the back? He said John the Baptist. That's just ridiculous, you know. Maybe there's just some banter going on there. But in the midst of the laughter and banter, Simon Peter's voice is heard clear and confident. Peter, maybe walking further back in the crowd, speaks up. Jesus, you are the Messiah. I guarantee you a hush fell. I guarantee you everybody that was walking with Jesus got quiet. Because they realized the implication of what Simon Peter just said. And not just that, where he said it at. Remember, they're wandering in hostile territory. Idols loom over and around them, and Peter's speaking up, you are the Messiah. Matthew records it like this. He records that Peter's response was, you are the Messiah, Son of the living God. Because guess what? There are gods like Pan, but then there is God, There's the living God who's unlike any other God. God is living. God is the one true God. So Peter makes this marvelous statement. You are son of the living God. You are Messiah. Messiah. Now there's a loaded word. That's a word that has a lot of weight on it. And words matter. And the word Messiah clearly mattered to Simon Peter, and it mattered to Jesus as well. When Peter says, you are the Messiah, that carries a ton of weight. That's who the ancient Jewish people are waiting on. That's who they're expecting. Messiah means the anointed one. You're set apart. The Greek word is Christos. We translate it Christ. That's not Jesus' last name. I don't know if you knew that or not. He doesn't go to Ted's and get a table for 13 people under the name Christ. That's not what it happens. It's a title. Jesus, the Christ. And Peter speaks up and says, you, Jesus, you're that guy. You're the son of the living God. You are the Messiah. You know, Peter's the first human being in the gospel to say who Jesus really is. A few demons had already identified him as the Son of God, but Peter's the first human to do so. But finally, after 8 chapters, somebody gets it. And Jesus has got to be thinking the same thing. Man, finally, somebody gets it. Finally, Peter, of all people, why's it got to be Peter? You know, Peter gets it. Because Jesus follows up Peter's declaration with a statement about what's going to happen next. And maybe he's thinking, maybe Jesus is thinking, okay, now that the disciples are finally clear-headed about who I am, maybe that their faith is finally real and true and they know who I am, let me lay out God's plan for me and for them. Let me tell them about what it looks like to follow me. In the Gospel of Mark, the conversation takes an odd shift. Jesus doesn't say whether Peter is right or wrong. Instead, watch what he says. Jesus warned them not to tell anyone about this, not to tell anyone about him. In the Gospel of Luke, Luke records, he says Jesus strictly warned them. He puts emphasis on this. Jesus put a finger in their face and said, don't you tell anybody about me. You see, this is sort of confusing to us. It's certainly a strange political strategy. Why in the world would you go around doing acts of compassion, having mercy upon people and healing people, and not take credit for it? Why would you, you know, claim to be the Son of God or have that affirmation given about you and then not want to tell people? Now, this is purely speculation, but I believe he wanted to protect his apostles. I believe he wanted to protect his disciples. Also, the time wasn't right. The time would come that he would tell them, you're going to tell people, actually you're going to tell everybody to the ends of the earth that I'm the Messiah, but this time isn't right. Don't tell anybody about me. But listen to what Jesus says next, because this carries a lot of weight. He then began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and after 3 days rise again. In other words, Jesus is embracing the cross as his mission, and he asked his disciples to embrace this mission as well. It seems in the context that Jesus didn't want the attention to focus solely on whether he was the Christ or the Messiah or even Lord or Son of the living God. It wasn't so much about the title. These words, these titles, they were important. But what he's getting at is he wants his disciples to focus on the cost of what that confession means. The cost of that belief. What that confession implied for their lives. That meant that if you follow him, you follow him in the way of the cross. You follow him in the way of death, to follow him in the way of God. In other words, if you make that confession that I am the Messiah, here is what that leads to, is what Jesus is saying. And so the question isn't so much of who do you say that I am, as it is, what does this mean that that is so, right? What words will you use to describe, to tell, to name? How will this belief play out in your life? You see, the gods and the idols they're walking amongst promised great things. Financial gain, agricultural abundance, health, safety. These gods and their messages seemed unstoppable. They seemed wonderful, especially that the message of Caesar and the message of Rome, they were clearly unstoppable at that time. And if you followed them, great blessings were going to flow your way. And so they're walking in the midst of all these great promises from these gods and from Caesar and from Rome. And Jesus pauses a moment and says, look, let me show you what being the true Son of God looks like. It looks like a cross. It doesn't look like me sitting up, you know, in the midst of a kingdom here on earth with glory and power. It looks like a cross. It looks like suffering from the people that hold the power. It looks like rejection, but it's also victory. It's also resurrection. But they didn't seem to pay attention to that last part. They seemed to just catch the first part of what Jesus said here again. Look at what Peter does. This is fascinating to me. And Peter took him aside, took Jesus aside, and began to rebuke him. So Peter says, hold up, Jesus. Come here a minute. We just had a moment. You know, I said the whole Messiah thing, and it was cool. And you're like, yay, Peter got it. We're on a good path here. And you know, you made this cool statement about how upon this rock you will build your church. And you even gave me the nickname Rock. You know, and it's kind of a cool nickname. I like it. And we had a moment, and it was a good moment. Jesus, why are you ruining it with all this talk about being killed? And Peter rebukes Jesus. And Jesus had to be thinking, man, we were so close. I thought you got it. You don't get it. I'm trying to tell you what it looks like. You don't get it. Just when Jesus probably thought he had gotten through to them, Peter takes Jesus aside and begins to rebuke him for being a Debbie Downer. Don't say stuff like that. The verb for rebuke conveys a sense of superiority, as if Peter had the right to tell Jesus what God's plan for Jesus' life was. You're the Messiah. You can't die. If you die, the bad guys win. If you die, Rome wins. If you die, Caesar wins. Notice Peter doesn't seem to get the last part of the prediction about Jesus rising again. That seems like kind of an important part of the plan, one that Peter missed. But Peter can't get past the first line. The Son of Man must suffer many things. Why does Peter respond so sternly to Jesus? Well, because he's a Jewish man. And that's not how it's supposed to happen. The prophet said the Messiah would come in glory, bringing with him victory over their oppressors and the restoration of God's kingdom on earth. The Messiah would be a conquering hero, vanquishing the Romans and reestablishing David's reign. Of course, Peter rebuked him. The Messiah suffering and dying? That can't be. That's not right. The Christ, by definition, is a winner. And yet, what Jesus has just told Peter is the exact opposite of what they expected. Watch what happens. But when Jesus turned and looked at his disciples, he did exactly what Peter did to him. He rebuked Peter. "Get behind me, Satan," he said. "You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns. Now, remember that Peter has just made this amazing statement, right? You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. A pretty amazing statement. The first time we see a man make this statement about Jesus. And Jesus says, Peter, you're missing the point. I want you to recognize something. I've exposed something about you. Your words, when you say I'm the Messiah, your words means absolutely nothing unless that word takes on flesh. You can talk the talk, but you're not willing to walk the walk. Jesus, at this moment, is trying to show Peter and the disciples, you may say that I'm the Messiah, but there's coming a time in the very near future where it will appear as though I am not the Messiah. I'm going to be killed. What will you believe then? Who do you say I am then? What will you say about me then? I will be rejected. I will suffer. I will be killed. It will appear as though I am powerless, but just wait. 3 days later, you're going to believe. Peter, you aren't focused. Peter, get your mind focused. You're the Messiah. Isn't that what you just said to me? Do you believe that or not? And Jesus decides to use this as a teaching moment, not just for Peter, but for the entire crowd. And so he reveals the fine print here. Then he called the crowd to him, along with his disciples, and said, so he says, everybody take a seat. We need to have a conversation. I want to talk to everyone. Apostles, y'all sit up front. Peter, front and center. You're really going to need to hear this. And listen to what he says. I missed a slide. So follow in your text. Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their, and this scares them to death, take up their cross and follow me. Whoever wants to be my disciples must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. You see, it's one thing to say Jesus is the Messiah. It's another thing to live like it. There are a lot of Christians in the world. There are a lot of people that claim that Jesus is the Christ. There are not a lot of people that live like it. There are a lot of people that claim Jesus is Messiah. There are not a lot of people that live like it. It's one thing to make this statement. It's another to follow through with this statement. And Jesus says, you need to understand, if you make this claim, from this point forward, it's going to cost you. It's going to cost you something. You're going to have to deny yourself and take up your cross, because you can say that I'm Messiah all day long, but when you live like it, when you get it, when it finally sticks and you live like it, well, for you guys, that means a cross. That means your death. And we know from a historical standpoint, that's exactly where it led the apostles. It led them to their death. Peter was so close to getting it. But in the end of this little moment, this little story that we have, he tries to define the Messiah in terms that best suit him. He tries to define Jesus in terms that best suit his view of who Jesus should be, what he believes the Messiah to be. What he didn't realize is that as soon as you call someone Messiah, you give up the right to define what that means. Confessing faith in the Son of God automatically assumes that we relinquish faith in all the other gods around us, clamoring for our time and attention. There are a lot of people that claim that Jesus is Messiah, and yet something else, another God, rules over their time and their attention. As Peter learned, when talking about Jesus, we have to do more than just get his title right. We have to be willing to follow him. Maybe that's what truly tripped up Peter. When Jesus starts to predict all that's going to happen, perhaps Peter realized that to follow Jesus not only means following him to Galilee and Tyre and Sidon and Caesarea Philippi, it also means following him to Jerusalem, where he will be accused of blasphemy, and following him to the upper room, where he will talk about his broken body and his spilled blood. It also means following him to the Garden of Gethsemane, where he will be betrayed and arrested. And it means following him to Pilate's house, where he will be tried and convicted. And it means following him to Golgotha, where he will be crucified. It's easy to follow Jesus, the Messiah, who's a winner. Jesus is saying, it's not easy to follow me. I believe to maintain our integrity when we profess the name of Jesus Christ, when we profess that Jesus is the Messiah, we must be consistent in following him, regardless of where that leads us in our lives. You know, the news for this group of men was, it's going to lead to your death. Thankfully, that's not the news for us, more than likely. You're probably never going to be put on a cross and hung upside down. You're probably never going to be stoned to death for claiming that Jesus is the Messiah. You're probably never going to be, you know, thrown into prison for claiming that Jesus is the Son of the living God. That's not the case for us. But if you follow Jesus and you claim that he's the Messiah, you will suffer. You will face trials. You will go through certain things. And the question tonight that I'm posing to you to think about is, will you follow through with who you claim Jesus is? Maybe it leads us to a hospital room of a dying congregation member as we provide comfort to them. Maybe it leads us to some places we would rather not go. Maybe it leads us to a meeting where we help a ministry team as it carries out its plans. Maybe it leads us to a Sunday school classroom as we help the children of Westside take their next step in faith, even though we're terrified of those kids. Even though we're terrified of teaching, maybe it leads us to a pulpit where we proclaim the Word of God. Maybe it leads us to a soup kitchen or a shelter or to WEI or to WBS. If we really believe Jesus is the Messiah, we are going to speak his name, but not just that, we are going to be prepared to follow through with who we believe he is, no matter where it leads. We will deny ourselves, and we will take up our cross, and we will follow him. Who do you say I am? That's not a question we can only answer once in our lives. We answer that question when we come forward to be immersed into Christ. We proclaim that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. That is not a question that we only answer at that one time. It's not even a question we should answer each time we join together as a church. I believe it's a question that we have to answer each and every day. Can we stand up amidst the foreign gods all around us and confess our faith? Can we stand up amidst the idols that are fighting for our attention and declare our faith? I admit there are days when I don't want to follow Jesus. It'd be a lot easier to do my own thing. And sometimes I do. But each day is another opportunity to answer this question. Who do you say I am? A teacher? A prophet? A good man who is just a historical figure? A nice guy? Or is he something more? You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. I hope for us that that's more than just a title. I hope it has an impact on how we live our lives and the choices we make, on the way that we decide what gets our time and our attention and our money. Let me ask you one more question, and we'll close with this. If someone were to observe your life for one day, if someone were to shadow you for a day, would they know at the end of that day how you would answer this question? Who do you say that I am?